Please give your parents a call right now.
Hello, welcome to episode number 22 of Geeking with the Moms. My name is Nicole Tanner. I am a geeky mom, and I am currently buried in snow, or at least my house is almost. But yeah, that's fun stuff, which we can talk about in a few minutes. I'm joined by fellow geeky mom, Regina McMenemy.
Who's not buried in snow.
Not buried in snow. and then Stephen Dutzman, who's editor and founder of Engage Family Gaming, has snow as well. Yes.
Hey, how's it going?
It's so funny. Our weather is like the same.
Yeah,
when does that happen?
Wrong, because we're on opposite sides of the country, right?
Yeah. Welcome to my hell.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know what it's like. You know, I grew up outside of Cleveland, so, you know, I know what it's like. But, like, what we've had here in Seattle would have been bad for Cleveland. It's just, it's so crazy. And I'm so over it. So over it. Like, I was telling Regina, we haven't left the house except for to, like, go outside in the yard and play for a week.
It's cabin fever.
It is. Yes. With a child who has not had school. She had some school last week, but has not had school this week, and odds are she's not going to have school tomorrow because the roads are still just terrible. And a few people are out there listening that would be like, oh, Seattle, you know, you guys get a little bit of snow and you freak out. I would like to point out that Seattle is very hilly, which is something that the Midwest and Northeast generally don't have to deal with, like, except for, like, if you're in Vermont. I know Vermont has mountains and whatnot, but the most of those areas...
a lot fewer people.
Exactly.
In Vermont than there are many in Maine. Like, the places where it's hilly and snowy don't have 4.5 million people living in 50 miles.
Yes.
Radius. So there's also that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons we've been inside is, like, Isaac was trying to go to work last Tuesday and he slid down the hill by our house in the new car. And so he's like, nope. And nope, I'm out. Not going to do that again. He's possibly thinking about maybe going in tomorrow, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, this is.
I
moved to the West Coast to get away from this crap.
Yeah. Welcome to global climate change.
I know, exactly. Yeah.
Watching it in Seattle, because I'm outside Portland, so we had 2 days. We had a big snowstorm. We had a small snowstorm that I canceled class for because my students, I'm not on a residential campus. There are not dorms on my campus. So my students commute, a lot of them commute from, like, as far as, like, an hour to 2 hours away into the mountains of Washington, and it can get much worse. You know, and you don't realize it. And I didn't realize that when I was first teaching here. You know, it can be rainy or snow showers here and devastating for my students. So I tend to be on the conservative side where I cancel class when I know there's going to be icy conditions. So I canceled because we had a storm that was, it wasn't a lot of snow. It was like 2 inches, but it was on top of rain already. And so when I went out that morning and stepped on it, I was like, I am not taking a car onto this. And there's no infrastructure, you know, like I was telling Nicole before we started recording, they don't plow the residential streets in my town, and they plow the main thoroughfares and that's it. And there's no maintenance. There's no ice maintenance. There's nothing anywhere except the main roads of the town. And so that just makes it terrible. So so we had the one storm, and then we had these warnings that it was going to, you know, snow overnight on Friday. And I had a friend who's like, oh, well, let's go out to dinner before we get locked in the house. And I'm like, I'm not going out to dinner when snow is coming. I will be in my house before this begins.
Yeah.
Comfortable. I already went grocery shopping in the morning. I didn't, you know, because I'm like, all the, you know, people are posting on Facebook. These, like, there's this Facebook, you know, sell your stuff group. And people are posting bananas for $100 because it was like the last bananas, $100.
Yeah,
and it
I
was
know.
Hilarious. Like, I just thought it was funny. But yeah, so she wanted to go out to dinner, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going out to dinner when a snowstorm's coming. She's like, it's not supposed to come until 1:00. And I'm like, I don't trust that. And it starts snowing at 6:00 here. So I was like, I feel so righteous right now.
Yeah. Like I said, the schools here actually like did early dismissal for all the kids on Friday because they knew that this was coming. Yeah. And like I was saying off the air, we got home, Anna built a quick little snowman in the yard. We went inside and boom, it started. It was almost exactly on forecast because they said it was going to start at 1:00 and we got back to the house at about 12:45-ish. Mm-hmm. So,
played for a little bit and then it was
blizzard.
And you've been nonstop since then. You've had what?
It has been. Yes.
Yeah.
It's been snowing almost nonstop. It's raining today, and lots of stuff is melting. Like there's tons of snow falling off of the trees in our yard. And one of a huge branch off one of our trees did not survive the first big snowstorm. It was funny because, you know, Anna gets up over the weekend. And you know, I don't want to wake up with her all the time. So I'm like, yeah, she goes downstairs, she plays game or watch TV or whatever. But she went downstairs and she came right back up. She's like, Mommy, one of our trees fell over. And I'm like, what? Are you serious? And so I came down and I mean, it was a large branch, but it was not an entire tree. So anyhow. Fun stuff.
Yeah, good times. Well, hopefully it will.
Hopefully
you'll get the warmer temperatures we have. And
yeah, the funny thing too is that Girl Scout cookie delivery is supposed to happen on Sunday.
I was wondering about that actually.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been asking, you know, we have a Facebook group of our service unit, the cookies specifically, and I'm like, how far in advance are they going to tell us whether or not it's going to happen? And she was like, the service unit product manager she's like, I don't know. She's like, as of now, it's still on. They're talking to the trucks and whatnot. And I'm like, man, like I'm going to have to go down. But yeah, so I'm going to like, people are not going to be able to drive up and down my development to like, you know, my car certainly can't do it. So it's like, I'm going to have to walk down to like the main street to have somebody pick me up, most likely. Oh, disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow. All right. So I'm going to stop complaining. I still do feel bad complaining, you know, because I grew up in the Midwest. And so, but this is like the snowiest February on record for Seattle since like 1925.
Yeah, I saw that. I think it's similar here too.
Yeah. And it's the middle of February. So, it could get even worse. But anyhow, all right, I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop complaining now. So real quick antidote, Anna finished Kingdom Hearts 3 over the weekend before Isaac did.
Wow.
Oh, I know. Exactly. She was like, I guess I haven't played it, so I don't know. She guess there's this thing where you can build custom ships. Steven, I'm sure you know that that's the case.
You're muted, yes. Steven.
They're gummy ships.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So anyhow, so she built a ship, all by herself, and she went and fought something, I don't know. And she's like, and I got an A. And she was so excited. She came upstairs and told me all this. And I'm like, awesome. Yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about, but great. So, but anyhow, have you finished it, Steven?
No, not yet.
Oh, so she beat you too. Look at that.
I mean, I would argue that she has more time than I do.
Especially in the arm.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh man, what are you thinking of it though, Steven?
I think it's great. I think it's great. My not finishing it is not based on my not finishing it is not because I don't like it. It's just that it's long.
Yeah.
And I'm really not trying to just shotgun the entire thing. That's really what it is. It's just, I just, am not trying to take it all in all at once. I've been waiting 14 years for this game. I can take a couple of weeks to finish it.
Right. Yes. So other stuff that's happening here, there's quite a bit that happened in games recently. So Apex Legends is out now. That is EA's answer to Fortnite, basically. Am I wrong about that? That's all I could gauge from it. I don't play it, so.
What? I mean, a lot of people play it, but it really hasn't caught up to everybody. Because it just came out. Just came out, and we had no idea it was coming until last week.
Oh.
This is the first time I've ever seen a video game happen this way. Basically, mm-hmm. Respawn, the people that make Titanfall, have been working on this game since Titanfall 2. So this is not like Radical Heights or something, which was like a quick pivot from other projects to try and make some money. This is the full development efforts of Respawn for 2 years putting this game out. And it's a free-to-play multiplayer battle royale shooter with loot boxes. And they said, you know what? We're Respawn Entertainment. We're not making Titanfall 2, which we know is going to piss people off. We were just purchased by EA, which we know people are already pissed about. We're making a free-to-play multiplayer shooter that is battle royale with loot boxes. We're not going to market this game because the marketing would have killed it, because everyone would have been like, well, how are you making money? And be like, well, with loot boxes and blah, 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 blah. So instead, they did the absolute smart thing, which is they had a huge embargoed PR event where they brought in not only traditional media like people from IGN, et cetera, but they also heavily brought in influencers like streamers like Ninja and Laserbeam and Shroud, many of which are names that y'all listening maybe don't even know. And they brought them in and they embargoed it. Traditional media was embargoed until the Monday after the Super Bowl. Mm. It appears that influencers were embargoed from saying the name of the game.
Mm.
But everything else they could talk about on Super Bowl Sunday, which is cool because everyone is on the internet on Sunday because everybody's, you know, if you're not looking at the Super Bowl, it is very likely that you are looking for the new Captain Marvel commercial or like that kind of stuff. And it just kind of got out. And then on Monday morning, they launched a stream and they're like, hey, the game's going to be available at noon, deuces. And then they just dropped this game. Yeah. And in a week, they have 25 million downloads and 2 million concurrent players. That's, yeah. So it's crazy.
Yeah. Sticking on EA then, especially since this has been a very successful launch, they had earnings. They announced their earnings earlier. Was it earlier this week or last week? Sometime soon. People were disappointed. One of those reasons is because Battlefield 5 did not perform as expected. Although it still sold a lot. I don't know who's making the forecast for these things. But then also EA has been not doing well on mobile. So that's the big factor as well. But now they've got this. I mean, everybody seems to be very successful with this business model and this gameplay genre. I'm just curious when people are going to burn out on it. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but eventually people are going to burn out on this type of game. So,
I mean, well, because they burn out of everything. I mean, well,
yeah,
one would think they burn out of everything. However, the same people buy Call of Duty every year and have been doing so for the better part of a decade. So what I think is happening is Fortnite really did push open Fortnite and PUBG, you know, they pushed the door open, you know what I mean? And there a lot of people piled into that theater, you know what I mean? And they were all only watching one movie. I think there's room for a few more movies and they can pull the audience away from Fortnite by a lot, and Fortnite would still be fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is kind of like the World of Warcraft situation, right? Like World of Warcraft, yeah. most one of the most dominant games in the world in its time. Eventually, you know, it kind of settled down and, you know, people were like, I don't want to play MMOs anymore. But the reality is a lot of those people just want a different game. I mean, how many of those World of Warcraft people are playing Destiny right now? Right. So I think this is definitely a change of pace. I was just playing it before this. Man, Respawn knows how to make a video game. it's a great first person shooter. And that is one thing that is a little bit different from Fortnite. This is a first person game. Fortnite is a third person game.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, Apex Legends has the legends in it, which are heroes. So this is kind of like Fortnite meets Overwatch. I really dig it. The thing that I like the most about it is the thing that's been getting a lot of press coverage now that people have had time to talk about it is that you could 100% play this game without a microphone, because it has a context sensitive ping system, meaning, your R1 button or your top trigger. If you hit it, depending on what your reticle is aimed on, your character will say, like, if you hit it while looking at an enemy, it will say enemy sighted, and it will actually mark the map as to where they are. Or you can look at a gun, and it'll say the name of the gun to your friends and put a thing on the map for them. So I think that's really, you know, that's really awesome.
Uh-huh.
I think that's – and that the fact that – I was playing with a bunch of strangers completely off of mics, and I was able to communicate with them without like really complicated stuff. That's really elegant and interesting. I expect that's probably going to get ripped off. But yeah, it's really good. That's why I think it will do well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of companies making battle royale games.
Right.
The ones that are going to continue to do well, like PUBG was like the king,
right.
And then Fortnite came in and kicked their butt. Why? Because Epic is much better at making video games than Player Unknown, who was a modder, right? Like he was. And I'm not taking away from his talent, but he was really good at making mods for Arma, and so he made a really badass mod for Arma. That's one level, right? And then I think it's like comparing like, you know, like a really, really good research paper in high school to like a senior thesis in college. It's like they're both big projects, right?
Yeah.
But like they're both really big projects and they could both be really good, right? Like, I mean, there are people that write papers in high school that are amazing, right?
Yeah.
But like, they're going to, and I say this knowing that, you know, all three of us are either writers or, we have a teacher who has read this stuff, right? Like, there's just a different level of polish and a different level of expectation, even if they're covering the same topics, right?
Yeah.
So the, and this is the same thing, like comparing the team that Microsoft has kind of put around and, you know, that has been put around Player Unknown to help make PUBG. Epic makes, they make Gears of War, man. Like they know what they're doing. And this is the same thing. Respawn is a AAA game developer. They make really good games. So I think eventually we'll be separating the wheat from the chaff is what's going to happen. And I mean, with two matches of Apex Legends under my belt, literally just two, this game is going to be the wheat. I think it'll be this one in Fortnite for a while. Other companies are going to come out and there's going to be more.
Yeah.
But this is a very, it feels good. It's fun. It looks amazing. And they already have their development plan in pass. They're standing on the shoulders of giants. They tweeted that out, right? Like they learned a lot from Fortnite and from PUBG. They're going to have a battle pass. No one would know what battle passes were if it weren't for Fortnite.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're adding a battle pass to Smite of all things, right? So like so many companies are figuring this out, but man, Apex Legends is very good. And the good news is it's not that intense. So like for kids that want to step up from Fortnite and maybe play it, I don't have a problem with that. You know, maybe watch a YouTube video. It's a little bit more realistic by nature of the fact that they are humans as opposed to cartoons. There's a little bit more blood, but it is not that much more intense than, say, Fortnite. Mm. It's not Call of Duty yet.
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 Okay. So switch gears a little bit here. It's funny because we have had the E3 discussion on this podcast a few times, more than a few times, probably. But Sean Layden from PlayStation recently did an interview with CNET where he was sort of giving a little bit more explanation of kind of why Sony decided not to do E3 this year. And so this is a quote from him. It says, you know, he's talking about how E3 was, when it was in its heyday, it was important because retailers came there and they decided what they were going to buy. The journalists came there, decided who was going to make the cover of their magazine. But now all of that's different. And so he said the trade show became a trade show without a lot of trade activity, and the world has changed, but E3 hasn't necessarily changed with it. I guess we've been having this E3 discussion for a long time. It's not dead yet. I will say that it's not dead yet. I think I would have expected it to go by now, but also Microsoft is doubling down on it. Apparently, at least that's what Phil Spencer is saying. So yeah.
I mean they changed it and they opened it to the public.
Yes.
So they did make changes, but I feel like they made the wrong changes.
Yes.
I don't think that was the way to go to make it more relevant. I mean, it made it more relevant to lay people, but not to the industry. So right. I guess that's the thing. Like, if its relevance is going to be toward the industry, they've moved away from that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what they need to just own up and be a fan event or more of a fan event and to call it that instead. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, even like the whole retailer bit, there's so much that's digital now.
Yeah,
that, you know, everything was boxed back then, or at least when I started going to. The first year I went was in 2003, I think. But, you know, everything was boxed and there wasn't really any internet presence as far as games go. I think maybe IGN had been founded at that time, but that was it. There was no one else.
Right.
And 1UP was just sort of starting its thing. And the only reason I know about that is because I was at Ziff Davis. But yeah, so most of it was magazines back then. And, you know, it was a big deal for the publishers to compete to get on the covers of the magazines. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Like I said, I thought it was going to die by now, but it's not. So I don't know. It is. It's. Just, I wonder if it will make the entire pivot to a fan event.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's just what kind of occurs to me about it, because they made that shift.
Yeah.
Took it away from being not. I don't want to say indie event. An industry event.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean. So the ESA is going to hold the E3 as long as they possibly can.
Yes.
So they need it to exist because it's one of their biggest events, right? So they're going to do the thing. So the idea of like, is E3 going to die? I still say no, largely because the ESA has money and they're going to will it into existence, whether it's recognizable to what you and I saw.
Yeah,
probably, you know, probably not, but it there's going to be a thing called E3 forever. So with that said, I understand what Mr. Layden was saying. And I agree with him. Like he said that the E3 has not adapted, and it certainly has not. Yeah. They opened the door to the public, but didn't give the public anything to do. And so I was there. I mean, Regina was there with me. I was there for 2 years. And the reality is, even with an industry badge, we struggled to find stuff to do to the point where we're not going this year.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Like it stopped being worth it financially.
Yep.
To go. Like we went and, you know, the first year it was worth it, even though we really didn't have infinity access because, you know, it was a bucket list thing, right? Like we wanted to go. And so, but now it's like, okay, we've been to the place where magic happens, and you know, it was cool, but we could probably get three times as much done for 10% of the price at John's house. So just like there are dozens.
I know, you don't need to be. I mean, everything is streamed.
Yep.
You know, and you know, at least for most of us, like the whole hands-on thing is like I know IGN and the main guys, like they still do a big deal about that. But like for me personally, like when we were doing Pixelkin and probably what you guys were doing for EFG is like that's not really that relevant. Like, you know, people want the news unless they like know you and trust you, like an IGN or GameSpot. They don't really care what you have to say about hands-on gameplay. And even then, like lots of the quote unquote hands-on stuff would happen with demos that, you know, would change a lot before they were actually released. So anyhow, yeah, I think you're right, Steven. I think something named E3 will exist. But another interesting sort of aside to that, which I didn't share with the group, is that the ESA welcomed lots of new members recently. One of which being Wizards of the Coast, which I thought was kind of an odd thing. It just got shared through the GeekWire people that I talked to. But I'm just curious to see, I wonder if the ESA is actively courting new members to sort of get some more oomph beside, you know, inside them.
Wizards of the Coast has a digital game now, though.
It does, but still has a digital game. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's just, you know, completely natural. But the ESA traditionally has been comprised of the big guys, the ones who are only digital video games. So
I don't necessarily disagree. I think that's kind of interesting.
It is.
But you know, I mean, it's tough to it's tough to say exactly what they're going to do. But I agree with like. I don't know. I mean, he's right that they didn't adapt, but at the same time, you know, like web traffic and streaming traffic, like every year, other sites that do streaming and put content up, like E3, some of that E3 content is the biggest content we put up every year. Yeah. And you know, it's the same across most channels. You know, everything gets an uptick because everyone's excited about E3. You can't ignore that. I think it's interesting that this is an interesting experiment that Sony is doing. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they don't have to just decide what they're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't. I mean, and he said that in this interview too. That he's like, you know, if we show up at E3, people are expecting us to say something huge, and you know, he basically admitted we don't have anything huge to say, so you know, we're not going to put that expectation on ourselves. You know, which you know makes a lot of sense. But yeah, so that was cool. That was an interesting interview to read because. Like, I know we had speculated that the reason that Sony wasn't there was because they didn't have anything to say. And he confirmed that. But it was nice to see him sort of confirming because they actually skipped, they do a PSX event that they didn't do this year because of the same thing, same reasons. So,
Interesting. It's interesting to see and take it. I think it'll be interesting to look back on what he said by the end of the year. Right. Because like, we don't know how, because they obviously have to give, I mean, he called out a bunch of different ways that they can reveal information.
Yeah.
So, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what methods they use.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, Sony doesn't have to worry about this, but there is still the issue of sort of the noise that happens around E3, which you can very easily get buried. I mean, like I said, not with Sony, but if you're like a smaller developer or publisher, you can get buried unless you happen to catch the attention of one of the journalists, because there's so much there to cover that they just can't cover everything. So, but yeah, so there's the noise factor too. Like if it were me, running a game company, which I don't plan to do ever, because that would just be a nightmare. I would not want to do all my big stuff at E3. I would pick a time where I can be almost the only, person in the room to sort of make announcements and whatnot, because you just get buried really fast unless you have something huge. And like, you know, odds are, you know, obviously not happening this year at E3, but probably next year at E3, we're going to get the, or even before then, the new console announcements are going to be coming. And at an E3, when that happens, like, forget it. You know, that news is just going to dominate everything. So,
yeah.
And anyhow, so that's all I had for games. Is there something I was forgetting, Steven?
No, I think, I mean, those are the biggest stories. We'll have more stuff to talk about next week. Oh, right. Wait, actually, wait. No. There is breaking news. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
Let's see.
Well, we're recording this during a Nintendo Direct.
No. The Nintendo Direct is tomorrow. We're returning.
Tomorrow?
We're recording this during.
I was brokenhearted for you, Steven. Yeah. I'm like, oh, we're recording in the middle of. Yeah.
With respect to you guys, we would have recorded a half hour later. Yeah. So I'm just trying to get the news out of something. Let's see here. Where's Twitter? Where is Jason Schreier? He can help me. More or less, Activision and Blizzard just had their earnings call. And they are, let's see here. They are cutting 8% of their staff, which is about 800 people. And the reason that they're doing it is, the reason they gave is that it is largely to switch from publishing. They are taking publishing and support staff from places like King and Activision Blizzard, et cetera. And consolidating those efforts within Activision proper and focusing most of their efforts on development. Because one thing that they have run into is, like, Blizzard just doesn't make enough video games. I mean, it's just really what it is, right? Like, Blizzard just doesn't make enough video games. They are really kind of slow. And yeah. I think Activision Blizzard has, like, the Square Enix problem. Like, when you don't put out a game every year or even every other year, it can be an issue. Yeah. So, unfortunately, 800 people are losing their jobs, mostly in publishing, esports, etc. Part of me was like, holy crap, you can't get rid of Blizzard esports people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Overwatch League, but I mean, the Overwatch League is a big commitment, and that was a long-term investment. I'm sure that's not being touched. I'm sure that's just being consolidated into Activision proper, or it is probably its own company at this point. It's really frustrating. Man, tensions are high in the industry right now, because this has been, this rumor started last week, and Activision couldn't really say anything because there are laws about what they can respond to and what they can say in and around their quarterly earnings calls.
So it's been a
frustrating week for you know, folks kind of embroiled in the industry.
That's interesting. I mean, it's always interesting to see someone huge like Activision scale down. I mean, and also, I don't know if we talked about this or not, but they've severed, I don't know who severed it, but the relationship with Bungie is done. You know, Activision is not going to be publishing Destiny anymore, doing that themselves. So that's an interesting thing that has happened at sort of the same time. So, you know, just wondering how much all of this is related, probably a little bit at least. So, I mean, I don't know. Bungie spun that story as being like them, like, taking charge and ownership of their own stuff and, you know, not being committed to something like that. But I'm like, really? I mean, come on. Activision would not have severed this relationship if it was being highly profitable for them. They just wouldn't have done it. But I mean, Bungie, I can imagine is very expensive to work with. Actually, I know it's very expensive to work with because one of my friends worked there as contractor for a little bit right after we moved up here. And like their thing was to, like, if someone new came on, they would be taken to lunch at John Howie Steakhouse. Now, John Howie is this crazy chef His steakhouse serves like the most high-end Wagyu steak stuff, and we're talking $200 to $300 per meal, if not more. And so that was the common. We've got a new employee. We take them to lunch here.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm like, that's insane. Like, I don't even know how that's how you could keep that going. But when I told them, I'm like, man, they must have a lot of money to throw around. But yeah, so I don't know. That's just interesting that that happened recently too. So,
yeah, it's that the whole Bungie thing. I mean, I think, you know, it's possible they might have seen the writing on the wall on this and just been like, you know what, you know, like it might have been their idea. I don't know. It's tough to say. Nobody likes it when anybody loses a job. My hope is that this just means that, you know, hopefully they all land on their feet, and hopefully this means that the people who have their current jobs, that they get a little bit better. So that's all. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Movies and TV.
We have a release date. Isn't it a complete date? Anyhow, we know that the season 3 of Handmaid's Tale will be coming in June.
June 5th.
Mm-hmm. It's coming in June. Mm-hmm. The main character's name is June.
Yes.
Really excited about that. I'm glad that it's coming with a little bit of a space after Game of Thrones ends.
So, I thought that too. I was like, well,
yeah, kind. I mean, and even like they were not, no one's going to cut into Game of Thrones while it's on. It's just not going to happen.
No, and it was interesting because the article that you sent or that you put on Facebook, so the date that they're releasing it makes them not eligible for
for Emmys,
for the Emmys, and they said it was because, you know, they wanted the quality of the show to be, you know, impeccable as it has been, which is absolutely true. Like, you know, production values, et cetera, storytelling, you know, it's all outstanding. But the first thing I thought was like, you know, 2 weeks earlier and you're right in the end of, or 3 weeks earlier, you're right in the end of Game of Thrones.
Yes. And you would qualify for the Emmys had you done that. So no one's cutting in to Game of Thrones. Everybody's just writing it off. I mean, which is the smart decision, obviously. But yeah, that was, I thought the same thing too. I'm like, oh, they're waiting till June. That's why.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. Like I said, I binged the whole thing.
I can't believe you binged that. It's like on my do not binge list. Like, Isabella even said, and she's like, I'm not sure I can watch another
season. Yeah,
I'm like, how could you not know the end of this story? Like, I have to know how this story ends.
Yeah, I know. And especially too, since, you know, Margaret Atwood is writing a new book, but it's going to take place like 15 years after
the
events of the original Handmaid's Tales. This is not going to have these, not going to be same characters by any, and I assume that that's what Margaret Atwood would do. You know, her writing a straight up sequel to something, unless it has already been planned.
Right.
Like the Mad Adam trilogy. I mean, she knew that she was going to write those. I couldn't
see
her going back and revisiting that just because, you know, the TV show is popular. She's one of my favorite authors and she's very respected. And I just didn't think that that's something that she would do.
Yeah.
So yeah, super excited about that. They just announced the release date. It was like yesterday. So I'm sure we'll get more information leading up to the release.
Oh, we could also talk about the trailer that they had at the Super Bowl. Oh,
they had a trailer? I didn't even
know. For Handmaid's Tale?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Human didn't tell me about that.
Oh, really? I thought that I had... I don't know. I thought somebody else had posted it that you had...
Maybe. But no, Stephen told me to go watch the... Bud Light. Was it Bud Light commercial? Was that who it was?
The Bud Light Game of Thrones commercial?
Yeah. This strikes me as the weirdest partnership. Like,
pretty
bizarre. I don't know. It is bizarre because, like, most nerds, quote unquote, that I know, maybe, and this is just my circle that is completely different from everything else.
To be fair, you're in Seattle, I'm in Portland. And both of these towns are like you know, beer snob central. Exactly. So, like, I don't know that we can know nerds who aren't, like, full on nose up at Bud Light of all things. Like, they at least drink water or something. I don't know. Disgusting as far as I'm concerned, but
yeah, I drank that sometimes when I was in college.
But, yeah. I wasn't trying to like.
I understand why. I'm just commenting that it was a really weird partnership,
right? The Game of Thrones and Bud Light. I mean, at least do like. I mean, I guess they couldn't do Guinness. That would be too. But like Guinness is more like what they would drink in the show than Bud Light is.
Yeah, that was odd. It was a little odd.
But they did a Handmaid's Tale, and it was they dubbed over Reagan, like Reagan's speech. And you didn't see that. We'll have to talk about that next time.
Yeah, no, I didn't see it. I'll take a look.
Crazy. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Speaking of that Game of Thrones commercial, though, it was a series of them. There were like what three or four? Am I right, Steven? It wasn't just one. But yeah, it was so, I don't know. It was, it was just, I mean, they were just like, you know, throwing together lots of the, pivotal scenes and sort of memorable moments from the show, like all together. You know, like they've got the mountain in his Kingsguard outfit, you know, after he has been brought back from the dead. But he's like squeezing the person's head, you know, like he does the Oberyn.
Right. Yeah.
And so there were other things too. But I was just like, this is cheesy. And I thought the first one that I watched, the first commercial didn't have a lot of official Game of Thrones stuff in it. It was sort of just like medieval type stuff.
Right.
It was this thing like, the fact that their beer isn't made with corn syrup or something like that. but it just had like medieval things. And I'm like, this is super cheesy. Like, but then like, I was surprised when it was like full on, like real Game of Thrones partnership. I was like, man. And it's funny. George R. R. Martin tweeted. He's like, man, the Super Bowl was terrible, but at least our commercial was good. I'm like, stop tweeting. And go back, sit in front of your computer, write. Stop tweeting.
Get back to work, you.
Why bother? Why ask him to finish? He's not going to finish. So why bother sending him back to work? Let's just let him at least entertain us with tweets.
Oh, man. Okay. So other movie news. So Lego Movie 2 came out, was just a week ago, a couple weeks ago?
Last weekend,
and it did not make as much money as people were expecting. Now, granted, people were expecting a lot. Like they had thought it was going to earn $55 million in its first days, and it brought home $34 million. So that's a significant difference from what was expected of it. But still, $34 million is not for a first weekend. But anyhow, so I didn't see it. Did either of you guys go see it?
No, but only because there's been other stuff going on. I mean, we're going to see it. I mean, the first one was lightning in a bottle. And like this is like the theme of the last like couple of weeks is companies like really over projecting and the world come like $30 million is a lot of money for an opening weekend, right? Yeah. Like for any movie not named Star Wars or the Avengers, $30 million is really good, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's frustrating. Like, I think I'm getting tired of companies over projecting, because I don't know where they're doing their math or where they're getting their numbers from. You know what I mean? Like the. So, whatever in projection model they're using, like, guys, come the hell on.
Yeah.
Because $55 million for the Lego movie, I mean, the first one was great, but.
Yeah.
Nothing, I mean, as good as it is, like, it's still the Lego movie. And also, like, we've had several, this isn't, like, it's the true sequel, but it's not the second Lego movie.
Right.
They did a Lego Ninjago movie. This is the fourth Lego movie.
Yeah.
People are kind like I think they kinda Call of Duty themselves out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The only difference is Call of Duty just continue regularly the best selling game in the world every year. Like, this is, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
Take your 30 million. Enjoy the fact that you're going to sell all the toys. And it's going to have a long tail. Right. Like, this is the thing about this. I mean, it'll make its money.
Yeah.
It's just, I think they projected too much. They flew too close to the sun, guys.
Yeah. I think, you know, Disney did the same thing with Solo, I think. And, you know, it was a huge disappointment because it didn't make these crazy numbers. But I think it's the same type of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is still a shame because I really liked Solo. I'm upset that they like just nixed all of the Star Wars stories because Solo didn't perform as expected, which is a bummer. Because everybody had wanted Obi-Wan. Everybody wanted an Obi-Wan movie. Which would have been hard.
They wanted an Obi-Wan movie until they got one, and then they didn't want it. That's the problem. Star Wars is, I don't know, man. That's an issue. I can't. Star Wars, like, no matter what it is, there's going to be some vocal minority that are going to complain about it. And I think part of the issue is, like, there's just too much Star Wars.
Yeah, I think that's the same type of thing that there's, you know, that's happening with this, with the Lego movie, is that they've burned people out already before they had the chance to release, like, the big sequel. So, which is the same thing that was happening with Star Wars. And I do think Solo was probably released a little early. If they had, you know, left some more time between it and the last Star Wars, I think it would have been different, especially since, like, the vocal minority were so upset with Last Jedi. I think that didn't help things either. So off of Star Wars, but another very popular franchise. This like caught my attention because, you know, Anna has been home from school, and so we watched Prisoner of Azkaban yesterday. She wants to watch that Harry Potter movie specifically over and over and over. That's her favorite one. But anyhow, So Daniel Radcliffe did an interview with, I think it was IGN, where basically he says that he thinks like it's inevitable that Harry Potter is going to be rebooted, and he's not going to be the only person playing Harry Potter ever, which, you know, I can understand that. I don't want to see that rebooted. I mean, there are lots of things I don't want to see rebooted that have happened anyhow, but
they did the Broadway play, so they have the Cursed Child, and he didn't star as Harry in any of those. I mean, none of them did.
Yeah.
From the movies.
That's what I would expect, is a movie of the Cursed Child with the original actors in it. But apparently J.K. Rowling has said, nope, absolutely no way. Cursed Child is not going to become a movie, but I wonder how long she's going to stick to her guns about that one. That's what I would want. Like, you know, they're all old enough now. They're like the same age that they would be. And, you know, wouldn't have to like do terrible makeup on them like they did at the end of Deathly Hallows to make them look older.
Yeah. Let me give you crow's feet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, now they're as old as they would be. So that's what I would like to see. But
yeah. It'll be interesting. I don't know. Did you read it? Did you read it, The Cursed Child?
No.
No,
I haven't read it because I'm reading through them with Anna.
Oh, right.
So we just tacked that on to the end, and we're going to read that after we're done with Death and Hallows. We're about two-thirds of the way through Order of the Phoenix. We haven't been reading it very much lately. We started again because, again, snow days. We got to try to fill our time with something other than TV. So
I don't want a movie of that story. I don't want that story.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
That after you read it.
Okay.
I won't say anything. I'm not a fan.
So he said that it was inevitable that it was going to be like rebooted in some way, and like, duh, right? Like,
like eventually,
That was a nothing burger to me. Like, it's cool that he said it, but like, duh, everything's being like, So when did those movies start? Like the first one was...
I was in New York in 2001, 2002.
Okay, so 2001. Yeah. So let's do some math. It's been almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Which is insane. But then again, they were going on for a really long time too.
I was
going
to say there's 8 movies. So, you know, yeah, that spans more than a decade. So
yeah, I mean, it's a ton. Like they went crazy, but they were such a big deal. And yeah, they were based yeah on books that are classics. You know what I mean? Like they are new classics that are going to be taught and involved in, you know, like the books that you read, quote unquote, like forever. Mm-hmm. And so it's really only a matter of time before Warner Brothers, who wants to keep that license alive, like they're going to do these like prequel things, but eventually they're not going to work anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that there is absolutely money to be made in remaking those movies, and it will absolutely happen in our lifetime. You know, like they can do it, and yeah, they'll, I mean, because not very often do you get a series that is a book series that is tailor made for 8 movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Like they already have that business model yeah and they could do it better. Right, like yeah, film them back to back to back to back.
The CG would be better.
The CG yeah would be better. Yeah. The practical effects would be better because we've gotten better at that. And the fact is, they could, by doing it, they could, I mean, from a logistics standpoint, you know, like they could, by if they know that they could make all of them and they green light all 8 or whatever of them, right? They can make them basically all at once and can and save on a lot of that, you know, like they could do a lot of stuff and save on a lot of production costs, etc. So that when they all make $1 billion, they'll just make that much more. Like, I think there's more value in DC making another bunch of Harry Potter movies, like true Harry Potter movies, than for them to make the Justice League.
Yeah.
The win yeah is potentially bigger. Right. Just wait.
I just don't want it.
I just don't want it.
You don't now, but in 10 years, it will be 30 years from the time that they made the first Harry Potter movie. It'll be very different.
I don't know.
Well, but you're now, weird.
I am weird, but especially now that it's been something that I can share with Anna, you know, and I expect that be yeah going on for a few years because we're not going to quickly read through all those books. It's not like, you know, she's at the age where she can just binge read and we're going through them together. So it's going to be a good probably 3 or 4 years before we get through all of the books. And so this has been like a experience with her and with specifically these movies and that in this cast that that I don't think I'm going to change my mind. You may call me weird, but they have taken on a new meaning and been newly special to me because of the connection with Anna now. So yeah. So what else movies? I didn't almost forgot to say this. So there is a trailer for Aladdin, the live action Aladdin.
Yep.
Is all right. I mean, as soon as it started, I'm like, oh, hey, I love that music. Like, I totally forgot how much I liked the music from it. But then, man, I don't know. I know we were, Steven said, you're going to be ready to defend him. But I don't know. I'm not sold on Will Smith as the genie. I'm not. Regina, did you see this trailer?
I didn't see it. But that's more avoidance.
Avoidance.
I have a really big soft spot in my heart for Robin Williams and his genie is pretty eclipsing as far as I'm concerned. I saw the pictures and, you know, I think it'll be, you know, and I enjoyed the Beauty and the Beast live action more than I thought that I would, but I just can't bring myself to watch it.
I know. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I mean, not.
I want to hear what Steven has to say, though, because I believe he's gonna.
So, Disney, there was no way. All right, so there are a fair number of people who are like, why are they doing the live action thing anyway? And that they would rather take the development and make, you know, more animated films.
Yeah, new ones.
So let's assume that I can't argue that. So let's assume that decision has already been made and we can't unmake it, right? Like the ball is already rolling. Every Disney movie is getting a live action remake, period, full stop. They're doing all of if they're going to do Hunchback and Notre Dame, they're doing all of them. They're just going to do them all, right? So we can't stop the wheel of time. So we just got to deal with it. So so I'm eliminating that rebuttal because we can't do anything about it. So they knew they had to do Aladdin. So their choices were remove the genie, right?
Yeah.
Which is not an option because that's not respecting Robin Williams, right? Yeah. Like the genie was that movie, period, yeah, full stop. Aladdin was the genie. So you need to have a genie in there. So that's an option, but clearly a bad one. Find someone who could imitate Robin Williams. Who could possibly do that without it coming off flat? So that means you can't imitate him. So that means you need someone who is good at improv.
Yeah.
Who can be and who has a big enough personality given the opportunity. And I really can't think of anyone else on earth other than Will Smith.
Yeah.
And I mean that like I'm just saying, right? Like he is the right guy for the job. Is that genie going to be like full of like non sequiturs and like weird references? Of course not. Is he going to be really funny because it's basically just going to be Will Smith? Yes. Yeah. And that's that for me. Like if you're expecting like a shape-shifting guy that's going to like turn from like Arsenio Hall into Johnny Carson and make like an Et Tu Brute joke. Like those were all like a really coked up Robin Williams in an improv, in a voice box doing improv. Right. There's no one on earth that can do that and will ever be able to do that. Right. That was a unique skill. That was his thing. Mm-hmm. So what they needed was someone who is who can improv, because I am sure that his stuff is improv, who is just naturally, casually funny. And I think Will Smith actually fits the bill. I think the CGI is rough, but also like that doesn't look finished, because if you look at multiple shots of it, they don't all look the same. So they're going to do more. I'm sure there's going to be more effects. Like I am willing to bet that there's going to be, when they finish it, like he'll have more like kind of smoke and energy coming off of him. Mm-hmm. So that is my defense. That's my Will Smith defense, is that he will be able to freestyle and improv and just be naturally funny. And, because they couldn't win any other way. They just needed to find someone.
Yeah.
Well, I don't take issue at all with Will Smith. Like I'm not, you know, avoiding it because it's him. Like I think you're right. He's a brilliant choice for all of those reasons. I just, there's certain things that are sacred. And as stupid as it might be to say that Aladdin is it, I saw Aladdin 6 times in the theater.
Wow.
6 times. It had like a profound, of that era of Disney movies, it was the one that had like the profound effect on me. I liked Beauty and the Beast, but Aladdin was like the one that I kept going back to, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's really just a personal thing in terms of like, you know, people say, you know, they accused George Lucas of ruining their childhood with the prequels to Star Wars. And although I played Star Wars on the playground and had memorized, still have memorized, large chunks of the dialogue of the first movie, I'm fine with what's happened to Star Wars. Like, those are more stories that could be told. I'm not a fan of the prequels for whatever, you know, for that reason, but I'm okay with the evolution of the fandom and the stories. But whatever it is for Aladdin, for me, it's not Will Smith. It's not anything against him, or I think he is a good choice. I had that hold that one very close.
And I'm kind of thinking too that like, we only got like that one line in the trailer. So it'll be interesting to see like the whole thing of it. One of the things that, you know, when they started, when they did Dark Knight, everybody was like, how in the hell is anybody going to follow Jack Nicholson's performance as the Joker? And then, you know, Heath Ledger, he took it in a completely different direction. Exactly. So it could be possible that that's going to happen with this too.
Yeah, exactly. And I might, I might go see it. I might, you know, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
I'll be more emotionally, you know, centered, perhaps.
I really loved Aladdin too. So
yeah.
Oh, I mean, right, I forgot that that was a thing.
What?
Oh, are you saying Aladdin also? I thought you were talking about Aladdin too.
No, I love Aladdin also. Okay. No, I didn't like Aladdin 2, although Aladdin 3, where they
the third one?
Yeah, where they met like Aladdin's dad or whatever. There was like a crappy second one that didn't have the right genie. And I think they it's like where you meet Aladdin's dad and there's some spoiler stuff that I don't want to give out, but yeah, there were three Aladdin films.
Oh, okay.
First one was good. Second one was bad. Third one was great. Okay. First one was like canon, right? But like the second one was bad. Third one was way better than it had any right to be. So yeah, it's, you know, I love Aladdin, but you know, this is going to be a different product.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it'll be fine. Will Smith is one of the most likable people on earth. We'll be okay. Right. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
Books and comics.
I finished reading the Winter Night Trilogy, the last book in that series called Winter of the Witch. It just came out and I finished it. And I already want to read all three of those books again. And that has not happened to me since the All Souls trilogy happened. So it's very good. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. And I have. I've started reading it again. But I'm using the excuse that, like, the first one was my book club pick for our book club.
Right.
And that's happening in March. So I'm like, this is my excuse to read it again. I have to be completely fresh on what's going on.
Right.
But anyhow, very good. Highly recommended. It's that, like, Russian fairy tale-esque type elements. So I don't know. Really good. Highly recommended. How about you guys? Have you been reading anything?
Same stuff as before. It's taken me a while to get through A New Childhood, largely because I'm really trying to like grasp it because there's just so much good stuff in there. But yeah, so that's my, I'm still digesting that. It's taken me a long time. But I'm like reading every chapter like two and three times. So
that's valid, especially given the topic and how it relates to the work you're doing. So
thing. Yeah, this is less pleasure reading and more like I'm reading for a class.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You're that I'm teaching.
Yes. The work. I am almost finished with The Bridge Across Forever, which I think I had just started when we were last talking. And I just need to point out that it is pretty significant that I've made it through almost a 500-page book in 2 weeks, because that's more reading than I've done in a small amount of time since my daughter was born. So what I've discovered is that I'm more likely to relax and fall asleep easier if I'm reading an actual book and not reading on my phone, which I think was the big thing that I need, big message I needed to get, like just being away from the screen is really important.
Yeah.
It's convenient to have my Kindle stuff on my phone, but I just don't.
That's why I have, you know, I have a Nook. I went all in on the Barnes and Noble. They better not discontinue this, but I have the e-reader one, not the one with the backlit screen.
Right. But the flat. Yeah. That's what my Kindle was like. My Kindle finally, I don't actually even know where it is. I had a really nice cover for it. My Kindle. It was the like first generation, the same thing, the static screen instead of, so it just looks like a piece of paper.
Right.
And I had a case that I loved for it, that had a built-in light, and it was really very contained and I loved that. And I read a lot on that. And then the case broke and I can't get a replacement for it anymore, 'cause this is like
Right.
Oh God, it was like 2009, I think, when I bought it. Yeah. So it's like 10 years old now. I went to find a new case and I'm like, they want me to buy a new Kindle. I get it.
Yeah.
So I bought it. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope that they don't stop making the e-reader ones that aren't like tablet-y type
right stuff. Yeah, exactly, because I don't want to fire or whatever that I like I guess they're called Paperwhite now. The Kindles are called Paperwhite, I think.
But the book that I have is called, like, I think it's called Glow Light, but it's front lit, it's not backlit, so there's like a light like at the top sort of in the device that shines down on the screen.
Shines down on the page. Yeah, that would be handy. I wish I would have, this one didn't have, I think, even the option for anything like that back then. And like I said, I really loved that case for a long time, but it did finally break. But I've really enjoyed this book. I had listened to it on audio, like an audiobook version of it, ages ago. Mm-hmm. And I actually have a quote on my Facebook profile. Stephen asked me where it came from, because it's about how learning is about how losing is a really important aspect in how we learn. And the last line is, losing in a curious way is winning. Yeah. And so it's like, I don't know, it was super profound in the time I was reading it. So
The Duolingo owl tells me that it's okay that I learn by making mistakes.
Yes.
Whenever I make I get like four sentences wrong.
Yeah.
In a row.
When I was doing the Girls Who Code Club, that was the biggest takeaway that I tried to give the girls about learning code, was when you make a mistake in code, it's one of the most valuable things, because you have to go back and see where it's broken.
Right.
And that's just as important as being successful with it. So
My Duolingo High Valyrian in the part that I'm in now has not been nearly as amusing as the other ones have been. I'm like trying to like get through this one, like it's, I'm almost done, so where I can jump into like the next section. I would like some amusingness again. Like there have been swords, but they're not referred to as being happy. And there's like no turtles in this section. So actually, they did throw in a turtle. Like, the thing that's really nice about that, and I do have to give props to Duolingo, is that once you get to a certain place, it starts sprinkling in the stuff from the previous sections to keep you up on what you've learned. So anyhow. All right. Is that it then?
I think so.
Right. Well, that wraps it up. Thanks so much for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any other feedback, you can send an email to geekingmoms@gmail.com. That is also our Twitter handle. I have recently launched a solo podcast all about Game of Thrones, and I'm still in awe that so many people want to listen to me babble about Game of Thrones. It keeps going. I'm in awe of like these, the numbers that I get.
You are in the zeitgeist.
I am like, wow. Yeah, and then like, Isaac is like the other day, he's like, you know, or you must have, you must have been like related to like somebody else. I'm like, God damn it. Don't tell me that. I just want to think that I did this on my own and not because I showed up as a related podcast. Anyhow, but it's going very well. I am currently doing recaps of all of the episodes. I finished season 3 last weekend. So I'm in season 4 now. I still got to race to get these done. Because I want to be able to do some other episodes, like prediction episodes, before it starts. So you can find that on Anchor and Spotify, on iTunes. It's pretty much everywhere. I got an email for that. That's geekythronesgirl@gmail.com. My personal handle on Twitter is @NicoleTanner. So Regina is head geek at the Geek Embassy and also hosts the Game On Girl podcast.
Yes.
And started a new, what are you calling it? Game On Girl?
Game On Girl on the go.
Go. All right.
Yeah. So my short solo episodes, also like an Anchor podcast. I'm trying to at least do weekly. I'm going to try to up that to twice a week when things mellow out a little bit. But I went over and went through the gamer types that I found in my dissertation. So the first few episodes focus on each one of the gamer types. The last episode that I recorded talked about, do the gamer types get along? Because I'm a self gamer and my husband is a mastery gamer, and there are games we don't play anymore. So, I think what I'm going to do the next episode as is games that all the gamer types like and can play together.
Cool.
So you have an idea about that. So check that out, and definitely check out Nicole's pieces on the Geek Embassy for about Game of Thrones. And also, we're going to have a Valentine's Day special, which will probably be just out after when this episode comes out, of how to write an effective sex scene, love scene, sex scene.
Yeah.
By Jay, or one of our writers. So definitely check that out.
Yeah. All right. Steven is editor, founder of Engaged Family Gaming. What's going on there, Steven? How many podcasts do you have now? Five? Something like that?
So we got two that are actively in production, and then we have three that are you know, we have more that are coming. Because I kind of figured out that I like podcasting. so the you know, the two big ones, I mean, we have our primary podcast, Engage Your Family Gaming Podcast, which is every other week. This week's a little bit delayed because we're actually going to New York Toy Fair this weekend. So we're going to be recording it on the way home. Linda and I, we have a new permanent host. Her name is Amanda. She's from superparent.com. And so that has been a wild ride. And the EFG Daily Commute comes out every day. Episodes are about 10 to 15 minutes long, and I cover a very singular topic. One day I covered two topics. I was a rebel. But that's kind of what we do, and that is also blowing up. So I'm very happy that people have found it. So go to engagefamilygaming.com/commute for the EFG Daily Commute. It's published. It's a perfect thing to listen to on your lunch break.
Nice. Right after you listen to Geeky Thrones Girl.
And Game On Girl on the go.
And Game On Girl, yeah.
That would, I mean, that would be a perfect lunch break because it would be like, you know, three sets of 15.
Yeah. Or the drive home.
Or the drive home.
Or the drive to, you know, whatever. All right. Okay, well, that wraps it up. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.